Good morning, we're on the record. It's Tuesday, June 12th, 2012 at 9:15 in the morning. The matter we have set is a code hearing appeal for, it's Eddie and Elizabeth Constantino. 2120017 is the case number. Mr. and Mr. Constantino are not present. Mr. McKee is present on behalf of the city, and I'm sorry, I mentioned appeal as it would be on most of our matters, and this is actually just a code hearing matter. Mr. McKee is here on behalf of the city, and I'll look to Mr. McKee to tell us if he has any information about the whereabouts of Mr. and Mrs. Constantino.
The only thing I know is their address in Las Vegas. I understand that the hearings officer received a fax from someone apparently not identified who may have been Constantino's in Las Vegas, but I have not been able to contact them at all.
Okay, so you've had no contact?
No.
And I'll ask the clerk if we've had any additional contact from Mr. and Mrs. Constantino.
The original notice of hearing was mailed on May 24th to the address is provided. On May 29th, a notice of hearing to the occupant was returned as vacant. We have not had any discrete information for the Constantinos. We did receive a fax from the Las Vegas area, but it did not contain any information regarding submitter. Based on no identifying cover sheet, it was entered in as from the respondents, given the location of the origin of the fax, but we haven't had anything else from Constantino's.
Okay. And the notice that was mailed was sent to occupant as well as what other addresses? You might be able to access more quickly than I can.
I have one address that was mailed to on Weeping Hollow Avenue in Las Vegas. The notice of hearing was also mailed to the National Banking Association in Charlotte, North Carolina. And finally, it was mailed to occupant at Sherman Street in Portland, Oregon. It was also, of course, mailed to the city representative, Mr. McKee.
Okay, so a copy of the notice for the hearing was mailed to an address in Las Vegas. We did receive a fax from an address or a phone number that would be potentially located in the Las Vegas area. So I'll find that we took all the appropriate steps to notify the Constantinos of today's hearing. We will proceed with the hearing in their absence. I'll start by having Mr. McKee identify himself for the record.
Mitchell R. McKee, M-C-K-E-E, the address 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue, Suite 5000 in Portland.
And Mr. McKee, before you testify, can I have you raise your right hand? Do you swear the testimony you give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, and I'll note that I have not entered any of the exhibits into the record until you request that I do so.
Thank you. I will go ahead and offer my exhibits 1 through 18, plus I have a couple of additional exhibits to offer as well.
Okay. How many exhibits did you pass forward?
Two more? Yeah.
Okay. So that will be 25 and 26. Additionally, I'll find that the mailed hearing notices and the rights and responsibilities are as well reasonably related to the case. So that's 19 through 21. I'll also enter 22 and 23, the fax documents that we received from Las Vegas, given that we believe they are from the Constantinos, as well as 24, which is the returned mail notice. So entering exhibits then 1 through 26 into the record.
Okay, just as a summary, this file has not been open particularly long, since 2010 only, but there has been no attention paid to it by anyone that might be a responsible party. So after our original complaint, in which we generated our violation letter, we found a number of violations. Since the property became vacant, there was the city went out and boarded it up, but not very securely. The property was again broken into and had obvious transient use. A fire occurred. That fire report is included in my exhibit packet, which damaged the property further. And there have been obvious entries into it by persons unknown who have destroyed the place, basically, on the inside. So without a responsible party to take action on the property, the city is going to request a demolition of this property. So I'm just going to go ahead and launch into the violations that I've identified out there. This is in attachment A. There is 28 violations listed there. In order to demonstrate those, I have in my exhibit packet a number of photographs, starting with exhibit 5 and going through exhibit 9. There are, I think, 12 pages of photographs.
Okay.
I've numbered those photographs at the bottom right corner to help us as I go through identify the violations. So, violation one, there's a tarp on the roof that the roof's damaged, deteriorated, and that's visible on page 10 in the center left photo there. Item number two, the tree limbs and branches on the roof. After we've discussed this in our section, that's actually not a violation. So technically, I'm going to take that off the list and remove violation two.
Okay.
Item three, portions of soffits and fascias damaged. You can find that on page 10. On this to the right center photograph. And on page 6, on the left center and left lower photographs. Item 4 is a damaged barge rafter on the east side. If you look at page 6, on the lower left, you'll see that the barge rafter is damaged near the bottom end. It's rotted out from the poor roofing and the gutter placement there.
Can I interrupt and ask you what a barge rafter is?
Barge rafter is, you're familiar with a rafter is the the support for the roofing material.
Mm-hmm.
It's a single piece of lumber that is spaced approximately 18 inches to 2 feet apart, and they support the plywood that supports the roofing.
Okay.
And they create the roof structure, not the ceiling structure, but the roof structure.
Okay.
The barge rafter is applied at the very end of those rafters, typically on an overhang,
mm-hmm.
and attached to the last edge of the plywood. I don't know, does that?
It would run perpendicular to the rafters.
Yeah, that's
and
correct.
It's kind of the-
Well,
the
parallel to the rafters. It's just like a rafter, only it's typically a thinner piece of material that's
okay.
supported by the roofing sheathing, and it creates a peak at the top. So it's supported at the top, and typically when you build one, put one in, you nail it from the top, and that supports it against the plywood at the very end.
Okay, that would be the piece that you see if you're looking at the edge of the roof.
Yes, that's okay. correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I hope that was helpful. And that's what you see in the lower left photograph on page 6 is the bottom edge of that.
Okay.
Five, gutters and downspouts, damaged or deteriorated. That's... page 6 in the left center photo, you can see how they're separated there. Number 6, exterior paint are peeled to bare wood. And again, page 6, that's demonstrated at the lower right photo and the upper left and a little bit on the center and lower left photos. Anytime there's paint missing, then you get exposed wood, which deteriorates with the weather. Number seven, windows in disrepair. On page six, that's a broken window there on the lower right. And sorry, that's the only photographic evidence I have for that condition.
Okay.
Number eight, the ceiling coverings are damaged. You can see on page two, in the upper right photo, that's a place where the roof has been leaking through there. It's kind of, these photographs aren't very good depictions, but this is what that represents. It's also visible on page four at the center left photo. The roof was leaking pretty bad there, and it starts to peel the wallpaper, and it damages the drywall ceiling there. Number nine is excessive mold growth from lack of ventilation. That is on page five. Again, it's hard to see, but the photographs at the upper photographs and the center right photograph are depictions of mold growth that are not quite very visible in these photographs. Okay. Number 10, open ground on outlets. Don't have any photographic testimony for that. The inspector reported that. We use testers in our inspections that demonstrate an open ground or electrical problems.
Okay.
So that was created there. Number 11, evidence of short in outlet at East Family Room. On page three in the upper left photo, again, hard to see, but that's a damaged outlet. So when they short out, they fry and make they blacken the outlet there. Mm-hmm. And that's what that's supposed to depict. Number 12, washing machine outlet inoperable. I don't have a photograph. Well, the on page two on the center right that shows the outlet, but it doesn't show that it's not operable. I have testimony from the inspector.
Okay.
Number 13, toilet not secure. When we go do our inspections, we put a leg against the toilet, and if it rocks, it's supposed to be secured. So, again, no photograph. Also the same for 14, the tub and shower drain was plugged up. No photographic exhibit, just testimony. Wall heater, number 15, the wall heater is not functioning. That's just testimony, no photo. Number 16, wall cover at pipe penetration. That, on page three, it's difficult to make out, but the upper right photo shows where the plumbing pipes, waste lines from the sink go through the wall. The code requires that the wall be sealed around those penetrations. Mm-hmm. Because that's a common entrance for pests to get in. So we make sure those are always sealed up. It's part of our code. Number 17, the kitchen floor is damaged. And page three, the center right photo shows where the tile is broken there. Number 18, front door hardware is damaged. He took a photograph of that on page three at the lower left. It's hard to see, but that's what that depicts. Number 19, smoke detector is not operable, not functional. There's no photographs of that. That's just testimony. Number 20, east center door casing damaged. That's number page 3 again, lower left photo. Number 21, east center bedroom window is too small. On page 4, and the upper two photos shows the window from that bedroom, and there is a minimum size that code allows for egress on windows, and there is some variance in that depending on when the building was built, but our code, Title 29, overrides the building code in some instances from when they were built. There's a minimum standard, and the inspector measured that and found that it did not meet that standard. That's what that depicts. Number 22, east bedroom ceiling coverings damaged. Again, he was trying to depict that same circumstance from number one. From number 8, this is kind of a redundant violation, I believe.
So do you want to remove violation number 22?
Yes, we can do that.
Okay.
Number 23, east bedroom wall coverings, wallpaper is damaged. That shows page 4, center left photo. The inspector, some inspectors are more thorough in their inspections than others. Number 24, cover plate hall switch. That's page 4 to the right. The cover plate's damaged. Number 25, the carpet's stained. That's a health sanitation issue. Page 4 and page 5, the lower photos there, show how it's stained. Number 26, outlet cover is damaged. That's the center left photo. Again, hard to see, but that cover is damaged there. The mold growth on the windows, we've actually already got one for that too, and number 9. So I'm going to remove that.
Okay.
27. Number 28 is not quite redundant. The inspector indicated that the ceiling coverings were damaged, and then here he indicates the wall coverings are damaged, which could have been combined in a violation letter. But the wall coverings depicted in this instance are the page 5, the lower right photo. So anyway, that covers the violations that I have here.
The photos we were looking at were taken in 2010, correct?
Yes.
There are additional photos in Exhibit 8 that were taken in 2012 by yourself, I believe. In February and in March.
Is that 28, you say?
It's Exhibit 8 and Exhibit 9 were the photos that you took in February and March of this year.
Thank you for calling that to my attention. I've been out to the property on a number of occasions. And each time I was there, I took photographs whenever I could. And the photographs that I took on February 6th, that's Exhibit 8, show the property as it was open. It was open to entry at the time. It had been broken into. This is after the fire occurred. And I was able to get some photographs from the outside of some of the conditions on the inside and the conditions at the of the trash and generally overall on the property. At the time, I was not I didn't have permission to enter the property, so these photographs depict that circumstance. Exhibit 9.
Mm-hmm.
These photographs taken March 12, 2012 are photographs that, wait. Well, you know what? I have to apologize because there are some other photographs that apparently did not make it into the record, and they more clearly depicted.
Are they the?
No, these.
The newest ones.
These are the ones I took yesterday.
Okay.
The conditions. I took some other photographs on the inside. If you look at page 12 on the photographs, you can see in the center left photo.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty rough conditions in that room on the interior. That condition persists throughout the entire structure. The walls are extremely damaged. There's graffiti everywhere. Portions of the ceiling are caving in. Insulation, water's leaking inside. The floor coverings are totally destroyed. There's trash everywhere from transients or actually from what looks like high school kids. So it's extremely, extremely bad inside. Damaged to the extent that it's I believe, going to be more money to repair than it would be to start fresh and build a new house here.
Okay.
Since this March date, I've been to the property a couple of times. My most recent was yesterday. When after we secured the property completely with a security board up, buttoned it up great. They did a great job. There's no evidence that the property's been entered, but there is evidence that people have been trying to enter. On the new exhibits, the photographs, I think exhibit 26,
mm-hmm.
you can see where the front door padlock was pried open. Well, that door is secured from the inside as well with screws. So they've made attempts to get in, but they were not successful. Additionally, there's an accumulation of roughly 2 cubic yards of trash now accumulated back in the yard, plus yard debris from, who knows, somebody's dumping yard debris and branches there. And that's, you can see that on the first page of the photos, the color photos. The grass is overgrown again. There's a trail worn around the side to the back of the house where there's a little covering back there so people can get out of the weather. On the east side of the house, I found some old sleeping bags and blankets, so it appears that somebody's been camping out there. Without someone to monitor this property, it's just going to continue to deteriorate, and the city can't really afford to go out there every month and clean the place up and mow the lawn and make sure it's secure. It's part of my arguments for demolition of the property.
Okay.
This is not a long-standing case, but it's an eyesore and a problem for the neighbors, problem for the fire bureau and the police. The owners are not responsive. There is please bear with me, sir, just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Exhibit 18 is a incident report from the fire bureau that they responded to a fire there. They found no people there, but they've identified the form of ignition as a litter, a combination of material, rubbish, trash, waste. I called them when I read this cause under investigation. This is as far as they'll take it without any further evidence.
Okay.
Factor contributing to ignition, abandoned or discarded materials or products. And then they, on the back of that page, page two, it indicates the building was vacant and unsecured. The property taxes on this place are 5 years in arrears. The property's in redemption. I contacted the property, the Assessment Taxation Division from Multnomah County. It takes about 7 years before they actually do possession through auction on a property.
Okay.
Just because they're way back behind, it takes them forever to take possession of the property. So that means that it's going to sit for another 2 years in this condition before anything happens. And even then, I suspect it'll be a while before they will tear it down or transfer title.
Okay. And when you say redemption, you mean that's the county process for taking the property back due to the unpaid taxes?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. It goes into a redemption state, and that lasts for, I think it's about a year. And even after they take possession of the property, the owner still has another 6 months or more to redeem the property for full payment of taxes.
I noted on one of the exhibits, I believe it's the same one that lists the taxes being unpaid, that the property is listed as in foreclosure as well.
That's the county's designation for the this tax status.
So that's not a separate process through a bank that you're aware of?
No,
okay.
It's not. No, this is a county designation for their process of calling it a foreclosure.
Okay.
And of course, the city is not foreclosing. At this time, I believe, the city liens at this time are only about $7,059 through code enforcement issues. So they're not extraordinary, but they are significant. That kind of leads to the argument of demolition and the fact that in order to repair the property, you've got not only the cost of the repairs to a property, but also the cost of bringing the taxes current and the cost of removing the city liens.
Okay.
And like I indicate, the owners are not responsive. They're out of state, and I'm not sure that they no longer have any interest in this property based on the information that was received by the hearings officer, which appears to indicate that there was a bankruptcy, leaving Bank of America as the servicing agent and possibly the recipient of that debt.
I did want to address the exhibit that was sent, presumably by the Constantinos. I thought I had it right here in front of me. Let me back up a page. So it's exhibit number 22. It came with a copy of the hearing notice attached, and then there were two pages. The first page is a Schedule D creditors holding secured claims is what the page is titled. And listed on there is the first mortgage through Bank of America Mortgage for the property located on Southeast Sherman Street. There is a note, it reads in full, property 13015 Southeast Sherman Street, Portland, Oregon, 97233, first mortgage surrendering, value $50,000. The next page is a discharge of debtor from the United States Bankruptcy Court for the District of Nevada, and it reads, it appearing that the debtor is entitled to a discharge, it is ordered. The debtor is granted a discharge under Section 727 of Title 11, United States Code, the Bankruptcy Code, by the court. And this order is dated January 30th of 2012. I believe, from my limited understanding of bankruptcy law, that this means, with regard to this property, the Constantinos have been discharged of any debt owing. The option remains for the Constantinos to retain the property And then subsequently go through a foreclosure process if they choose to not do anything with it, or to continue paying on the debt that's owed, or they could surrender the property to the bank. I suspect that they've surrendered the property to the bank, given the condition of the property, the failure to pay taxes for a number of years, and they're living out of state, though I don't have that information for certain. So I don't know who is the current owner of the property, whether it's the Constantinos or Bank of America, though in all likelihood it might not matter either way, since neither party has responded to yourself or taken any steps with regard to the property in a significant amount of time. But I did want to make sure that it was clear on the record that we received the information, though the effect the information has is unclear at this point. I don't believe it has any effect outright with regard to the condition of the property. It may only affect who's responsible for the debts owing on the property. And that'll be something for me to determine after the hearing.
Okay. This actually goes to the information that I received on a title report that I did, actually a lien and encumbrance report, not a full title report. The county indicates, the county report that I have indicates the Constantino is still in ownership of the property. And the lien and encumbrance report.
Which exhibit is that?
I'm sorry?
Which exhibit is that?
The document? I'm sorry. Exhibit 17.
Okay.
Aside from the unpaid property taxes listed there, it also lists a line of credit deed of trust to secure an indebtedness in the amount shown above, which is $150,000. And that pretty much ties into the amounts indicated in this bankruptcy claim that you'd received
mm-hmm.
for $149,892 with an unsecured portion of almost $100,000. So this deed of trust lists a beneficiary as Bank of America, and on the creditors holding secured claims also lists Bank of America as the managing agent.
But you, to this point, have had no contact with Bank of America?
I have. I have been working with a property preservation vice president for the region here, contacted them and told them about this property. I sent them a copy of this title report. They were unable to find any records of this property. Additionally, this morning, I contacted one of her employees who is a property reservation manager for, I guess, the whole country. He didn't really identify that, but he did say he worked for her. And I gave him this information as well. Plus, I gave him the information that I had about this creditors holding secured claims report that Bank of America is listed as the managing agent as well. He responded with no certain information. He didn't know about this property, but he did indicate that it's like several million properties that these, I thought the number was staggering, the number that they have to manage.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to get back to me with that. I told him there is any order that was issued still had an appeal period for about 2 weeks.
Okay.
So at least I've done, I think, due diligence on that issue.
Okay. Any other information you want to provide about the condition of the property or the request for demolition? I will note that I have not had a demolition case specifically, so I need to look at the standard.
Sure.
I'd relying on you at this point to make sure that that standard is met if that's what you're requesting.
There is a section of Title 29, 29.40.2020.
I'm sorry, will you say that one more time?
29.40.020. That lists certain conditions that might contribute to the justifying demolition of a property. And in this case, I believe certain conditions are met. Section B, portions of the structure are weakened and unstable. Roof, walls, ceilings, from the fire and it's extinguishing. And what I observed is conditions where the roof is leaking so badly. J, it's a fire hazard based on the dilapidated condition and the transient entry to the house. That was demonstrated, I think, pretty clearly with the fire report. K, other hazards, manifestly unsafe for occupation, constitutes a health and fire hazard. This property is absolutely unsafe for occupancy. I don't see any foreseeable issue about them remedying the problems. I believe that it constitutes a hazard for the neighbors in the event that there's a fire with these, either at the structure or with the tall grass and weeds or the trash that's accumulating on the property that could spread to the neighboring properties. L is a public nuisance. It's an attractive nuisance and a harbor for vagrants and criminals. M, chronic dereliction. It's been unoccupied in excess of 6 months. N, violation of codes. It's maintained in violation of Title 29. Additionally to that, I think the property is financially unsalvageable. That's basically the case for the demolition. I want to just go over the complaint real quick and make sure that there's the issues that I'm interested in there are covered as well.
Okay.
The relief, of course, correction of all violations, compliance with city codes. Section B, civil penalties. I'd like to recover the city's costs on this for the inspections we've done, housing and nuisance inspections, a total of 13 at $146 per inspection is $1,898. These numbers are based on inspections only since the original maintenance violation letter was sent. I'd like to recover the cost of the hearing at $1,215. And I'm asking for an additional penalty of $2,000. I put this in here in the hopes that I will get a response from someone to appear at the hearing. And typically I'll drop that request in the event that someone shows up to take responsibility. I'm asking for C, vacation of the property. I want to make sure that the property is maintained vacant. If anyone goes there, I want to be able to get them out of there as quickly as possible. With a vacate on the order, that allows the police to go in and trespass or arrest people when they find them on the property. I'm asking for correction of all violations within 45 days, and in the event that that's not met, a demolition of the property. The item C is vacation immediately. Item E talks about vacation and security board up of the property. In the event that the someone goes in or removes any of the boards, this we'd like to be able to enter the property and seal it up as quickly as possible without taking the time to get a warrant. We just want to go out there and take care of it. A warrant takes, going through the notification process and the warrant takes approximately four to 8 weeks, depending on the circumstances. We have to do it constitutionally, but in the past, we've been able, with an order, named in the order, we've been able to enter the property right away and take care of the problem.
Okay.
F is demolition of the property. G is cost for recovery for demolition. And we want to be able to make sure that the city recovers its costs in some fashion as quickly as we can. Recurrence of violations, H talks about typically if we find trash on the property, an accumulation of more than 2 cubic yards, we want to be able to go in again without a warrant and quickly clean it up, remedy the issue. same as if security board up portion. I might have altered this just a little bit here. I'm talking about disruption of water or electrical service or interruption of trash service. In my complaint, that's like an oversight. I forgot to remove those for typically an occupied property.
Okay.
The cost recovery, this is something that occurs in the event that someone is installed in that property who might be a legitimate tenant, but the owner has taken upon themselves to put someone in a property where they shouldn't have. So we want to be able to remove them and recover our costs and have the owner cover the costs of relocation, which is J. And we'd ask that the hearings officer retain jurisdiction for a period of 180 days. Given my experience with purchasing on the demolition contracts, I'd like the option to renew that or extend it as well.
Okay, given that it could take greater than 180 days
it's
to get
possible.
Demolition.
Yes.
I believe what would be the most appropriate to do is to withhold making a final determination right now until I've had the opportunity to look at the demolition section of the
Certainly.
Code and make sure that I believe all of the questions that I have been answered. Additionally, I want to look into who becomes responsible for the liens if we're in a state right now where we're not sure who the property owner is. And in all likelihood, the Constantinos may not be the property owner. If I order a lien directed towards them, I don't know what effect, if any, that has on the city's ability to recover that lien, given their bankruptcy. So I have a couple of questions outstanding that I want to make sure that the order is written so that the city can recover their costs appropriately from the appropriate party. So I certainly expect to be ordering demolition. The violations listed are pretty clearly laid out within the photos as well as your statements. So that's not my issue as to whether or not this property is in violation. I just want to make sure that the order is written correctly and that the standard has been met for demolition of the property versus simply vacation, which is what I've handled mostly in the past.
Okay. I think typically the lien incurred would go against the property itself. So in some cases, we might ask that a lien be installed personally on an owner. But
mm-hmm.
in most cases, it'll be a going against the property itself.
Okay.
Which, so whoever owns it or takes possession of it would be responsible for it. And that makes it more recoverable by our section.
Okay. And that's helpful for me to know as well. So I will make sure that that's done appropriately so the city can recover costs. And I will make sure that the standard for demolition has been met.
Okay.
And I hope to have this order by the end of the week, if not next week.
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. We'll close this matter.